Welcome to the Fabric Podcast. These messages are intended to spark your own reflections and conversations all week and beyond. That's why you can find it anytime along with other resources and ways to keep the conversation going at fabricmpls.com/scraps.
Hey, Happy New Year, everybody. All right. It's good to see you all here today. Welcome to those who are listening on the podcast as well. We're glad that you are part of this experience today as well. I'm Greg, and it's good to be here with you today. If you do have your Sunday paper, there is an outline. If you're not familiar, on the back, you certainly don't need to look at it or follow along. A lot of people like to. If you're listening on the podcast, you can go to our scraps. There should be a link right on the description that takes you to it as well. So New Year's resolutions, anybody make them? Yeah? No? Really? You're so good, you don't need them. Yeah. If you did make any, you've almost done it a week already. So I won't ask on our failure success rate so far. I'll leave that up to you. So even if you're not into resolutions, I'm not a real New Year's resolution kind of guy myself, but I think it is a natural time for us to kind of think about who we are and what we want our lives to be about so that we can use that in, you know, building the year that comes, that's coming ahead of us. And that's really what we want to do through January. So we want to talk about four big decisions, okay? Four big decisions that are just kind of basic parts, basic elements of life that we kind of need to have in place so that we know what to do with all the rest of the stuff that's going to be coming down the pike at us. And I think it's a good discussion for us to have. I have to say that, you know, we're talking about four big decisions in there. I'm sure there are other big decisions. These very likely aren't the only ones. And there's certainly also different ways that you could word these or, you know, talk about them. You know, that's all fine. I think these are significant ones, and I think they really cover the ballpark pretty well. So, you know, you can let us know how that works for you. I also have to say, as we talk about four big decisions, that if you come from an evangelical Christian background, that word decision may be kind of a word for you. Talking about the decision, you know, have you accepted Jesus Christ as your personal Lord and Savior or not? That's not what we're talking about. We don't go there. I don't go there. I don't really think that is the decision that Jesus is about or the Bible's about either. It's a different subject, but if you ever want to sit down and talk to me about that, I'd be more than happy to. So we're talking about some four decisions that I think are really basic to who we are and what life is all about. And I think that is much more what the Bible, what our tradition is all about. But let's get down to what the real conversation at hand is, okay? I want to talk about being a bus driver. That's what you all came here for, right? Yes, at last. Charles, who's in charge of bus rapid transit for the MTA, has given me applause. All right. And why did you do that to our highways? No. Another conversation. Okay, so, believe it or not, I was a school bus driver for about 20 years. I had my commercial driver's license, which is what you need. I didn't drive buses for schools, but as a pastor, I often had to drive youth around on their trips, okay? So we had a youth leader who was a bus driver, but often it took more than one, so I got my commercial driver's license as well. In fact, Joe Locke was another one of those. Yes, he did this as well. Becoming a bus driver is a really big deal. I mean, you think getting your original driver's license was a big deal? This is like, they really put you through tests. I thought it was going to be like, how do you handle this 40-foot long, you know, great big monstrous bus? That's challenging, but the real challenge was what is the inspection, all right? You've got to master the inspection of the school bus before you can drive it, and you have to do it every day. Now, when you're just a driver, you know, going out for the day, it's not so hard because you get this booklet with all the little check, you know, boxes, so you just kind of go around and do it all. But for the exam, you've got to know it all by heart, all right? And these examiners, like, they've got really good poker faces. They don't let you know if you're missing something or if you're right or you're wrong. They just kind of just keep going along and taking their little notes as you go. And so you've got to be able to walk around this 80-some-point inspection process under the hood, inside, on the outside, and not miss anything. And if your bus doesn't have something, like say the bus that you're doing your test on doesn't have air brakes, when you get to the part of the bus where the air brakes should be, you've got to point it out and say, this is where the air brakes would be, and this is what I would be looking for if it were there. And you just got to do this flawlessly. You've got to get the entire thing right. Now, it seemed a little bit ridiculous, actually, after a while when you're doing this day after day after day, because literally, in all the years I drove, I don't know that I ever found anything wrong with any of the buses I was driving. And that's because these buses all came out of the garage, and there were mechanics taking care of them and doing all the regular inspections on them, and anything that a driver from a previous day reported, they were fixing before it ever went out again. You know, so like, why do you keep doing this? Why do I go through this 15, 20 minutes of this inspection every day? Well, you know the answer to that question. It's because there's going to be 50-some kids from families just like yours on that bus with me in a couple of minutes. And, you know, that responsibility is huge for those kids. I would say it's big enough for me to take those 15 or 20 minutes to go around the bus and make sure that everything was ready for it to get on the road. Now, your life is actually a lot more like being a bus driver than you think. Really. Now, some of you are parents of a couple of kids that are in a million activities and say, I know, I feel like a bus driver every day, all right? No, that's actually private chauffeur syndrome, all right? And that's another message as well that we'll get to at a different time. But this is a different thing. What I'm talking about and what we're going to be dealing with in January is this kind of this focus on the checklist, the role of that checklist for the bus driver that the bus driver is going to go through before getting on the bus every day, okay? It's the, this has to be in place. This has to be set before I can do what's next. Or in our terms of our lives, this has to be established first part of our life before we can get to all the other very important and also very difficult and very complicated issues that we're going to have to deal with day to day. And the idea is that if the bus isn't safe, if the bus isn't sound, then when I start driving out, no matter how good my driving is, I can't change that. The bus isn't ready to be out on the road, okay? Likewise in our lives, there are a couple of decisions that we need to make before we take on our day-to-day decisions. They are foundational, all right? They're foundational to all the decisions that will follow. If we don't settle these things first, then what we do day-to-day is determined randomly. It's based on our moods. It's based on our stamina. It's based on the fads that we happen to be following. It's based on the peer pressure that we might be feeling and things like that. And basically, our lives then become very capricious. They become inconsistent. We become unreliable. And overall, our lives really lack a lot of integrity. And while we want our lives to be leading somewhere, really, we're just kind of drifting and going for a ride. So I think we can do it differently than that. So I want to dive into this a little bit. And I got a couple of things to say about this. First of all, what we're talking about during this month is not new news. This is all stuff all of you know already. The problem with what we're going to be talking about isn't the knowing of it, it's the doing of it. And to be generous, for you and me, we probably don't put these things that we know perfectly well to work as well as we should, okay? Another thing that I got to come clean and tell you about is these four decisions, these four big decisions that I'm going to be talking about, I already know the answers to them, and I'm going to tell them to you. Now, I know that is not very fabric-like. We don't do that, right? We don't give the easy answers. We really elect for the better questions rather than the easy answers. But the reason I'm going to be so bold as to tell you what these are the decisions you should make isn't because I have any secret wisdom, because I don't. It's really because there's really no debate about it. I mean, I think you're all going to agree with me on it. Like I said before, the problem isn't the knowing of these things. The problem is in the doing of them. So that's what we're going to do. We're going to be diving into these and dissecting them. And while, you know, we'll be looking at the bits and pieces and the dynamics so that we can kind of get some of those out of the way and make following these decisions early or easier, the big job is going to rest with you. It's in your lap. Like, how do I make this happen in my life? How do I not just know this? How do I live it? And, that's something that's going to rest in your laps individually, but it's also resting in our laps collectively, because it's by doing this together that this stuff works. And, you know, kind of piggybacking on what Pat and Rachel were saying, groups here isn't like just something we want you to do. We just think it's something that adds a lot of value. And a group can be a great way for you to process some of these ideas and figure out how you can get traction in some of the things that we'll be talking about. And I have to say, by the way, if you don't agree with me on some of these four big decisions, that's okay, all right? Find your answer to them. The point of talking about these isn't to get you all to agree with me. The point is to get you wrestling with these things and settle them for yourself and figuring out what it means for you and how you want to leave this out, all right? So, that aside, today for this first big decision, I want to talk to you about your relationship with reality. And mine too, all right? I've named this week, as Rachel mentioned earlier, do I have to make choices? And the answer is, yes, you do. Okay? And I hope your decision about this is as simple as simply saying, my choices matter. Right? That's the first decision. My choices matter. Here's the deal. You're a human being. Looking around the room, I can see that's generally true. Slight laughter, thank you. And as such, you have a strong tendency to want things to be a certain way, all right? And the drive for doing that is really strong because seeking the comfort and seeking convenience, it can be incredibly strong and pull you to wanting to do that. So actually, this is on your Sunday paper. As a human being, want can play a bigger role than reality in your life. None of us like to admit this about ourselves, but it's probably true about all of us. Our wants can play a bigger role than reality in our lives. That means you and I have a tendency to overlook what is really happening in order to believe what we want to be happening. And we know how to fool ourselves on it. When the truth about a situation is, like I said before, inconvenient, or it's uncomfortable, or it's challenging, or just simply makes us adjust more pieces of our lives than we really want to, then we're likely to not accept that reality, right? Even though, by definition, it's real. Now, this may sound just like a silly human quirk, which it probably is, but that doesn't mean it's unimportant. In fact, it's incredibly important and has an enormous impact on our lives. This is a fundamental orientation that each of us needs to make a fundamental decision about. That reality exists and that we are going to conform our lives around that. That's what we're going to deal with, not our illusions. And the difference that it makes will change everything. Your choices matter. What you wish was happening won't determine what will happen. Your choices will determine what happens. Your choices matter. And your choices, this idea that your choices don't matter, is rooted in an illusion. And that illusion that all of us carry with us in some ways or another is simply this: I am an exception. No, you're not. it's this, I know this is what always happens when people do this, but it's not going to happen to me. Now, we don't really think this. We aren't conscious about it, but it's operated inside of us, and it lets us off the hook on all sorts of things. And what I have to say is, like, you are exceptional. Every one of you are exceptional human beings, but you are not an exception. You're not exception to the laws of nature. You're not exception to the consequences of your actions. You're not an exception to the way human dynamics work. Those things are going to do what they are going to do. Maybe some of these statements sound familiar and maybe can help you relate to how this plays out in our day-to-day lives. They're examples of the ways that we think about ourselves that help us think we could be accepted from the impact of the choices we make. Try some of these out. I don't have to show up on time every day for work. I don't have to turn in that assignment or read all the chapters in that reading assignment. I don't need to prepare for that interview or for that appointment. I can just go cold. I don't have to take time for the other people on my team. I don't have to make the effort to get to know the other people in my apartment building or on my block. I don't have to give all the information to the other people in this project that I'm expecting to do their part. I don't have to exercise regularly or watch what I eat. I'm doing just fine. I don't have to tell my partner about all these different parts of my life. That's my business, not his or hers. Or then there's kind of a slight twist on some of those, like, I know I'm in an unhealthy, abusive relationship, and I should get out, but I don't really have to. I'm doing okay. Or he or she has always been this way, but they'll change. Yeah, good luck with any of those, okay? I mean, we can get away with these things for a while, but sooner or later, the impact, the results, the consequences of our decision or lack of decision is going to come and it's going to haunt us. It's going to be there. It's going to be present in front of us. Now, interestingly, the Bible is probably perceived often as taking us away from reality, and I think it's really the opposite. It's really dragging us towards reality. The Bible is really trying to tell us, no, you cannot have the world you want to be true. There's only the world that is true, all right? And that's the one you're going to have to deal with. There's a reading suggested for you to spend some time with this week. It's beside the outline on your Sunday papers. And it comes from a really short book in the Bible, written a couple of decades after the life of Jesus. It's attributed to a man named James. And it's written to an audience of people who say they're following Jesus, but there's very little evidence that they actually are. I mean, you know, their lives are not conforming to it or changing much around it at all. He's really kind of addressing, on the better side, this idea of empty faith, or maybe on the heavier side, this like pure hypocrisy. And I will break these couple of sentences that I want to talk about today into two parts. But the first part starts like this. The writer goes on to say, be doers of the word. Now, that word is kind of amorphous, right? This is like the teaching. Like, what do we learn from God? What was Jesus trying to point us at, okay? Be doers of the word and not merely hearers who deceive themselves, right? They think they know what it is, but they're not. They don't. For if any of the hearers of the word, if any are hearers of the word and not doers, they are like those who look at themselves in the mirror. For they look at themselves and on going away immediately forget what they were like. Well, that's kind of ridiculous. And that's what we're talking about. We know the truth of our actions or our lack of action, but we deceive ourselves. We live in this illusion that none of it matters. The metaphor of the mirror is like the author saying, how can you say you don't know something that is as plain as the nose on your face? How can you say that you don't know that you have a nose? How can you say that you don't know that there are consequences to your actions, to your choices? Now, this I don't want to know reality thing that we live with, it's a part of every one of our lives. It's a self-fueling cycle. And it starts like this. You'll find this on your papers as well. All right. First of all, it starts out as this unconscious process, all right? We all have this unconscious process. We don't think about it. It just becomes our default mode. If we were conscious about it, there would be so much cognitive dissonance there, like reality does not match what I'm thinking, that we would be forced to do at least something about it. But we don't. All the more reason why we stuff it down and we make sure we aren't aware of it. So it's unconscious, and it's based on intentions. Right? I have these intentions about myself that I'm unaccountable to, and that's going to be good enough. But they don't get me anywhere, right? It's not actions, not doing, but what we would like to believe about ourselves. When we began this community some years ago, and we've kind of tested out this idea over and over, and it seems to still be true, but one of the things we identified of the people here living in South Minneapolis is that we have a lot of ideals, a lot of intentions, right? And we're all frustrated because we don't live up to them the way we'd like to. I mean, that's what we're talking about here, right? I think that's a common issue that we all deal with. It's also, this is a big difference, for instance, between being non-racist and being anti-racist. As non-racist, you know, I'm not going to do or say anything that would, like, actually, be hurtful to a person of another race. I'm not going to, you know, do anything like that, that's going to offend someone or actually do something that's going to be hurtful to another person, but I'm also probably not going to go out of my way to speak up for people of other races, and I'm probably also not going to examine my own life too much to find out where I might be implicitly or unintentionally, you know, being a part of these systems of racism that exist around us already. So this unconscious process of thinking that we are exempted from the consequences of our decisions and actions is based on intentions that we forget and we give up on. I mean, it's hard. It's easy to forget and give up on it because we're not actually doing anything about it, and it's really all an unconscious thing that's going on anyway. So we just get to the end of it, and it all disappears, and we're happy with that result because we don't want to be uncomfortable in it, and we don't want to be inconvenienced. And that just takes us right back to the top of the cycle again, where everything is unconscious, right where we started. And making the way that we behave more and more unconscious, more and more automatic, the consequences buried deeper and deeper, where it is easier and easier to forget them. And we could forget also what could be happening in our lives because we have become so desensitized to what actually is happening in our lives and in the world around us. So, you know this stuff. But there's a problem with that cycle, isn't there? And the problem is simply this. You are not immune from the consequences of your decisions. You are not an exception. Neither am I. So all those things that I mentioned before, not showing up for work on time, not doing your assignment, not building relationships with your teammates, not getting to know your neighbors, not facing the facts about that relationship you are in, those are all going to start giving you problems. You don't get the promotion. You get a D in the class. Your teammates are uncooperative and distrustful of all the initiatives you happen to bring up. Your neighbors are cold and distant with you, and you don't feel like there's anybody you can ask to watch your cat when you go out of town for a few days, you know? And you find yourself in a dead end in that relationship that you know you can't stand, but you have no idea how to get out of. But here's the trick that we do. That's not a problem because we learned how to deal with this. We've got this mastered, all right? When reality doesn't match what you want it to be, just make it someone else's fault, all right? It's perfect, all right? And you know how this goes, you know? My boss didn't give me the promotion, but the reason is that he's inflexible. My teammates aren't cooperating with me. They don't really trust me. It's because they're a bunch of jerks. Or, you know, the reason that I got that D was because my teacher is unfair. And the same thing, the people on my block, they're just plain unfriendly. That's what the problem is. And as for that relationship that I feel trapped in, my partner has so many issues that there is nothing that I can do about it. All right? It's someone else's fault. It relieves me of all that uncomfortableness. And you've done it. I've done it. We shift the responsibility from ourselves to someone else because taking responsibility is uncomfortable, and I don't want to feel that. So I'm going to give it to someone else, right? This responsibility, I don't want it. Here, you take it, all right? And the neat thing about that, even if the person won't take the responsibility for it that you give it to them, in our twisted logic, that's part of what affirms the fact that it really is their fault. They won't even accept responsibility. They won't accept the fault that I don't want to take on to myself. It's kind of a weird thing. It's what we do. The blame game works like a charm. That's why we start learning it at such an early age. Our parents tutor us. Our older siblings show us how to do it. It's his fault, right? You know, we learn it early on because it works so well. But there is a problem with a blame game. It's a game. It doesn't actually change anything, does it? It doesn't make the world any different. It doesn't repair relationships. It doesn't move you to what's next. It just leaves you where you were, stuck. And here's a takeaway on this. People who are interested in growth, that's who you are. I mean, that's the reason you're here, right? You're here because you want to learn what's next for you. You're interested in growing. People who are interested in growth don't blame others. They don't blame others. They look for the causes. What's happening here? What could be different, all right? Now, finding fault with another person for something, even if it's true, even if it is their fault, it really doesn't help things because that doesn't change things. It discharges your comfort, but what changes things is understanding why that happened, right? So instead of just, you know, giving them the fault, going to that person and saying, hey, at that meeting last week, you know, you looked like you kind of really shut down. Something must have happened there that wasn't comfortable for you. can we talk about that so that isn't going to happen next time? You know, because I don't think that was very fun for you, and it certainly didn't work for the rest of the team either. That's the kind of approach that we need to take. So here's the lesson that this decision to accept that our choices matter teaches us. Reality is not your enemy. Reality is your friend. Reality is your friend. It seems so obvious, but boy, do we fight against that. You know, when Jesus said, "The truth shall make you free," he wasn't necessarily talking about some like cosmic or some, ultimate truth. The truth he was talking about was as basic, as simple as the truth that we all experience every day, that is apparent for everyone in how we look at the world and cooperate in the world when we know the truth about it. Now, I don't care if the truth that you are shown is bad news, the reality that you see is bad news for you, it is the news you need. Don't run away from it because it's telling you something about yourself you don't want to know. That is the information that you need. It isn't isn't our job to hide from the stuff we don't want to know. It's our job to face it and to learn from it. So instead of that unconscious cycle of intentions that, you know, we forget and we give up on, we need a different pattern. We need one that kind of welcomes reality instead of denying it. One whose sole goal is not to be perfect, not to avoid making mistakes, or just to be comfortable, but that embraces growth through learning. Growth through learning. So here's this growth through learning cycle. This is what it looks like. There's probably lots of ways of articulating this as well, but I think this, in the context of what we're talking about, does it pretty well today. The first step of it is recognize. Recognize what's happening, all right? Know the truth. Ask questions. Be prepared to be surprised by what you find, okay? If you refuse to be surprised, you will never actually know the truth. Even if that means that you find that you were doing something that wasn't helpful or even hurtful to other people, okay? It's good information. You need to know it. You and I just don't like it, right? No one likes to get the kind of news, but it's the news we need. So recognize what's happening. Second, decide. Decide that you will deal with the situation you discover is true, not the one that you want to be true. This is sort of the fundamental decision of what we're talking about this week, right? This idea that your choices matter. It sounds so easy to decide that you're going to deal with reality, not your own manufactured illusion. But boy, is it a hard thing to make yourself do, especially when it doesn't line up with what you would like to have happen. The next piece is plan. Plan what you think is best to do, given this reality and the fact that you decided to choose it. Doing this thing that you decide to do, this plan, it can be nothing, all right? That's sometimes the appropriate response. That's your appropriate plan. But this is a step that connects intention with implementation. It's the piece between wanting to do something and actually doing something. And it's okay if the plan you come up with isn't perfect, if it's wrong, all right? This is a cycle. You're going to get another shot at it, and the next time you're going to know better, and you can come up with a better plan. You need something to try, and you got to try a lot of things to find what works, but create that plan. The next piece is practice. Find a way to actually practice the plan that you came up with, right? The plan was in your head. The plan happened through a conversation. The plan happened through as you were thinking about it. This is actually something that you will do, so practice it. It's the implementation. Practices like this, they're memorable, they're repeatable. You find a way that it fits into your own pattern of living, your own pattern of thinking, so that it can become something that does become automatic, that becomes routine, that can actually change who you are and what you do and conforms you to the way that you'll live that fits who you really are. So experiment with that as well. The last piece is support. You need support to do this well. So find support. And I have to say, you know, I put this at the end, but this needs to happen all the way through this. This isn't just something you top it off with. You need support to go through this whole thing. You need people that are going to encourage you. You need people that are going to hold you accountable. You need people that are going to give you ideas. You need people who are going to learn from you what you are learning, right? And this happens, like I said, through the entire process. Our groups and Fabric are a great way to find that kind of support throughout this whole cycle, and I hope you are in one, as Pat and Rachel were talking about it, but you really need this kind of support in all the areas of your life, right? So the question is, how can I make my family culture one that enables us? How can I make my work culture? How can I make my friend culture? How can I help our neighborhood culture be a culture that encourages us to deal with the reality that is, rather than enables us to hide in the shadows of the world that we would like to be true? Now, you might be sitting there right now saying, Greg, I know all this. This is just plain obvious. I don't need to rehash it. But the truth is, you are a human being, like I said. And as such, you have a tendency to let what you want play a bigger role than reality does. You'll find this on your outline. I think this sums it up pretty well. We are all susceptible to thinking that the short term, the superficial, the immediate gratification way towards life is easier and it's more satisfying, right? I mean, it gives you what you want right now, right? So I want to do that. We also think, along with that then, that the long-term response, the deeper, the delayed gratification route, is too hard, it's too complicated, and it's self-denying. And who wants to deny themselves anything, right? That's how we tend to think. But the opposite is true. Got to turn that completely around, all right? Think about it like this. Go back to another workplace situation. There's tension with one of your coworkers. So over lunch, when that coworker isn't there, you kind of take the opportunity to do what comes natural. Start complaining to your workmates about this person and how you don't like them and the dumb things that they do. It feels really, really good, and a lot of people agree with you. The problem is, a little bit later, the word gets to that coworker that what you said about them. That's funny. Just like you were a little loose of your tongue, other people happen to be the same way. I mean, news gets around, right? And suddenly, you've just got a big mess on your hands. Not only do you have to deal with this very uncomfortable, awkward situation you created with this coworker, but also you're going to find that you probably broke down your own integrity, your own trust with all the other workers. Because just like when that person was out of the room and you talked about them, they assume when they're out of the room, you're going to talk about them as well. So have a lot of fun rebuilding the trust and rebuilding your integrity with all those people that you violated there. So the easy, the comfortable, the short-term, it feels good right now path actually created the enormous mess for you. And wouldn't it have been a lot easier to go to that person that you're having problems with, sit down, talk about it, deal with that issue? Initially, that's a big thing to jump over, but it's the one that's actually going to give you the world that you wanted. A comfortable, a productive, an enjoyable work culture to be in. So remember that saying about not being a hearer only, but being a doer of what we know to be true from James? Well, it goes on. Let me walk you through this. I think this is one of the most amazing verses in the Bible. James wrote, "But those who stoop and peer," now, I'm going to stop right there. When you read this in your own translation, it probably is going to say, "those who look." But the word in the Greek that is used is not the normal word for look. It actually means to stoop, right? This is like those who get down on their hands and knees to examine the flower, examine the insect that's down there in the grass, okay? So those who stoop and peer into the complete law. Again, let's tear that one about. This word, complete, it's, again, another word that's really hard to translate into English. Some say perfect, some say complete. It's this idea that it's whole, that it's natural, that it's intrinsic, that it's perfect and full, right? This full law, and law here isn't a rule. Law is like this way of being in the world. So those who stop and peer into this complete way of being. And then he says, this law of liberty. Well, hold it. Law and liberty, those don't go together. Law is constricting. Law is making me do it. Law is confining me. No, not this one. Not this one. This law, this way of being, when you really get down and look at it and examine it, when you see that this is what life is really like, you finally find out that all the doors are open to you, that you finally know how to navigate this world you're in. So this law of liberty. And he goes on, and keep doing it, all right? This isn't a one-time thing. This becomes a way of being. This becomes your mode and you practice it, you are a truth seeker, you keep doing it, then I love this next line, not being hearers who forget, remember the mirror, not being hearers who forget, but doers who act, they will be blessed. Blessed. An unfortunately trite word in English, isn't it? The word in Greek, makarios, has a much bigger meaning. It's probably easiest translated as happy, but happy is so also superficial in our culture. But it's those who do this, they will be blessed. They will find that things are working. They will be at peace. They will feel fulfilled. They will find relief, all right? And they will find it in their doing, not in their wishing, but in their doing. They're realizing that their choices matter. So do you see how natural, how healthy, how satisfying, how easy this kind of life really is? It seems like so obvious. Why would we not always choose it? Because we don't. But I can say we do choose it when we surround ourselves with other people who are willing to engage these conversations that matter and look at things and help us to keep on that track on a regular basis. And, again, I've got to come back to this idea that this isn't foreign to us. This law that is talked about here is the same law that Bible verse from centuries and centuries before the time of Jesus is captured in Jeremiah, where Jeremiah says, the time is coming when this law will not be written in stone, but it will be written within you. It will be written within your hearts. The truth is there already for us to know. I mean, we are part of this fabric. We are woven into it. It is not foreign to us. It's when we unweave ourselves from it that we get distanced from it and we forget it. And so that's the last thought here that I just want to leave you with, and that is, this is not about you needing to change. No, it's about needing to become yourself, remembering who you are. All right? God is in your heart. This has been written in your heart. It's a matter of realizing that you are woven and to quit trying to abstract yourself from the truth, extract yourself from the world that you are in. Being yourself isn't easy, I know. Just take a breath and get some perspective on what we're talking about and maybe what it means for you. Who are you deep inside? What is that world that you know perfectly well, but yet you have spent so much of your life hiding from it, telling yourself it's not true, that even the reasons for hiding from it have been buried deeply within you, and you're not even sure where they come from anymore. That tendency to live in a world of your wants rather than the world that is really around us, that we are called to, that is the place for us to flourish, it's compromising. It's compromising who you are. It's compromising your relationships. It's compromising your finances. It's compromising your aspirations for your life. It's compromising collectively what our world is like and what happens here. So it's time to reboot. And that's what we'll be trying to do all month long. So start it by deciding that your choices matter. Experiment with that this week, okay? And I think that's a choice that we can all make and just begin to live into.
Thanks for listening. We hope you take this conversation and keep it going. If we are adding value to your life, we appreciate your support of this work so we can engage more people in these conversations that matter for their real lives too. You can do that at fabricmpls.com/give. We'd also love to have you join us any Sunday morning at 10:30 at Field Community School in Minneapolis. That's at 4645 4th Avenue South. There are opportunities for kids of all ages to connect to. Learn more by searching Fabric Minneapolis.